And can you still hear me?
Yeah.
That should be even better. My apologies. I don't know why that happened, but it's a real pleasure to be here. I should have been in Cork on my way to Valencia, where my grandfather grew up, but obviously COVID has prevented that. But it's a pleasure to be with you all. I came quite late to poetry, and I came quite late to serious sailing. But Valencia has been where I have focused both poetry and sailing. So I'll start off with a poem I wrote about the first trip I made north from Valencia. Called Kerry Head. Close in off Kerry Head, single-handed and sailing north, I saw a wisp of starlings exploding off the cliff, like ragged smoke from some far cannonade. They were blown sharply left, right, spun down and up against the high stoop of a peregrine falcon, shearing down through them, stooping again and again, until it curved violently from below into the struck softness of the flock. I'd sailed all the grey day towards this, its seas breaking in white feathers on the fringing rocks. Of course, there's been some terrific poetry about the West Coast, from Moya Cannon now, Michael Longley, Kerry's own Paddy Bush, back to Seamus Heaney and to Yeats and McNeice. What interests me is people who write, if you like, from the deck of a boat, not from the shore. And we have people in Cork and Kerry, Theo Dorgan, great sailor and a great poet, Paddy Bush, knows his way very well from one end of a boat to another. But above all, Richard Murphy, I think, the Connemara poet, who died a couple of years ago. And it's that kind of poetry off the deck of a boat that I'm particularly interested in. So here's a look at the terrain. When you're a sailor, you concentrate on rocks and avoiding them, but you also concentrate on what keeps you off the rocks, which is the lighthouses. So this is a poem about the Irish West Coast lighthouses. It's a list poem. Cromwell Point, Inishtirith, Scattery, Inishere, Straw Island, Slyne Head. The West Coast lights, defining land, beginning here, and see down there at the foot of the cliff, beyond the fringe of surf. These planted towers, white in the day against black rock and purple hills, busy themselves at night to count and recount the dark pauses between each sweeping signature of light. Seen from the sea, it's different. Far westwards, the vast cupboard of the ocean swings wide its swaying doors, now idly, now with a slam that heaps up swells the size of football pitches, tilts them slowly forward, sets them off in ranks towards the waiting lights. Before them, in a no man's land of shoal and rock, the great rollers hesitate, then rise to meet Karakada, Doon Guddle, the Big Breaker, Fool's Shoal, Wild Bellows, Mullan Carrick Scaltia. A wave-torn litany of dangers, where the swells begin to lose their shape, their smooth progression, rear up, turn in a moment to a tumbling roar of surf, an explosion of wild water the coasting voyager must skirt or be lost. Before him, glimpsed inshore off the back of a breaker, the beckoning lights. Always around him, the shambles of the sea. I said I came quite late to sailing. I waited till I was retired before I both got heavily into poetry and seriously into sailing. My first trip was north from Valencia up the west coast. And to do that, you've got to obviously head north through Blasket Sound, which is a fairly nasty bit of water. And then you turn east inland along the north side of the Dingle Peninsula. And the north side is the side that catches all the bad weather. It's steep, it's sheer, it has steep headland, steep mountain after you leave the cliffs, and it's very often dark and black, and the cliffs, the mountains are in mist. And the first time I did it, I was terrified, I must admit. What am I doing here? This is far too dangerous for me. You see nothing along that north side. It's too steep for ports. But as I went along, my eye was suddenly caught in the midst of all this wilderness by three tiny scraps of fields, three quite clearly walled fields, but hanging off the edge of the mountain. And I asked about them when I finally got ashore. And they said, oh yes, that's Fochanamanach, that's the monk's fields. And I don't think anybody knows which monk, but we're obviously going back to Brendan's time. I was so fascinated by Fochanamanach that I wrote a poem as if it was not in the Gaelic, which I don't have, not in the Irish, but in Anglo-Saxon with the rhyming, alliteration. So the monk's fields. In summer, he took the solitary sea road. The season soured with the world's spoiling. So skies were dark, dank cliffs darker, no wind to relieve waves' sad winding. While craft and sailor, they crawled as companions down channels strange to them, skirted with sea wrack, familiar only to Fulcan, Cliff Fulcan. Out on the sea, great swells reared skyward, roared up the rocks at the foot of the seamount. No port, nor landing, nor progress on path, the hillside sheer, no refuge, nor shelter. But the monk leapt ashore off the back of a surge, grasping for grip. God willed him to all these three fields of green, his patched piece of heaven. And of course, that monastic heritage doesn't dominate, but it's a very continuing part of the West Coast heritage. The small monastic settlements on most of the uninhabited islands that are now uninhabited, tiny protected uninhabited islands, usually with no port, just a beach that was only accessible in the best of weather. I counted 18 of them one year I came back down from Donegal to Dingle. But they've still got the monastic remains on them. You go from St. Brendan's birthplace in Finet, you head north past Shannon, past the Aran Islands, and then you get into the three holiest islands of the sailing fraternity. First of all is St. Magdara off Roundstone. Then you go round Slyne Head and you go past Inishbofin, and you get to Caha in Clew Bay, which is St. Patrick's Island, where St. Patrick, when he got fed up with everything that was going on ashore, took off for a bit of peace and quiet. And the third north of Achill is Inishglora, which is Brendan's island, where Brendan allegedly plotted the Navigatio, the voyage over the Atlantic. And the old sailors, every time they went past one of these three islands, would let fly their sail as a kind of tribute to the saint. My theory was that the holier the island, the worse it was to get ashore on. And certainly Inishglora was very difficult to get ashore on, but I was lucky. One time I got ashore for a whole night, another time I got a few hours there before I had to clear out and seek shelter. And the night I spent on it was very memorable, and this is the poem I wrote about it. At anchor off the island of Inishglora, about now the monks would have been chanting evensong, just over there where the squat stone oratory still stands, deserted and black against the setting sun. Sandpipers descant. Tiny oceanic petrels are sure to nest, burble and hiccup deep within the sanctuary the piled stone walls provide. And even on this calmest of evenings, the Atlantic breakers growl and boom on the outer rocks. From his ruined cell, Brendan, gazing west, still peers with an ancient eye down the path of the sun towards a destination only he can believe in. Eastwards, Ireland is glowing in an afterlight that's picked out Achill's crouching mountain bulk way to the south, clawing heavily at the darkening sea. Nearer, a group of seals called out, a groaning their own sad antiphon. How can I not join them in honouring these men who could disentangle dogma as well as a net, pull a fierce oar, or dip a fine quill into the purple they distill themselves from the island's whelks? When Brendan was an old man, still dreaming of ocean, a group of swans began to perch at eventide on the oratory gable, drawn far across the waters by the low-voiced chant of prayer. Three came each night, and Brendan it was who knew them for what they were, the children of Lir. With words of blessing, he drew them back into human form, then buried their air-worn bodies where they fell so lightly out of 900 feathered years into their final rest, before he launched out again like a wild swan himself across the seas that cradle me at anchor here tonight, alone and not alone. There is so much good writing about the Atlantic, but one of the greatest voices, I think, is Connemara's Richard Murphy, who died a couple of years ago. A good sailor, fairly good sailor, and a terrific poet, but put Connemara and the hooker sailing of Connemara very much on the map. And I thought that it would be right to hear something of Richard Murphy's poetry as part of my tribute to the West Coast. And I've asked Theo Dorgan to read a poem that Richard Murphy gathered from a local sailor and then put into verse. So over to Theo.
No idea whether you've got image or not. Are we good?
I think we have you perfectly.
Very good. How are you, Mick? How are you doing?
I'm grand, Theo.
It's time we got out in the boat again.
It is too.
Are you missing it?
I am indeed.
I woke this morning remembering chunks of that nightmare trip we had from Iceland. Do you remember?
I don't want to. Now, come on, give us Mr. Murphy.
Murphy was a dodgy sailor, you know. He was a dodgy man on a helm, but we won't talk of that. This is a Pat Clarity's version of the Maisie. I've no tooth to sing you the song Tierney made at the time, but I'll tell the truth. It happened on St. John's Day 68 years ago, last June the 24th. The Maisie sailed from Westport Quay homeward on a Sunday, missing mass to catch the tide. John Kerrigan sat at her helm, Michael Barrett stood at her mast, and Kerrigan's wife lay down below. The men were two stepbrothers, drownings in the family and all through the family. Barrett kept the shop in the island. Kerrigan plied the hooker, now deeply laden with flour. She passed Clare and she came to Cahir. Two reefs tied in the mainsail, she bore a foresail but no jib. Southeast wind with strong ebb tide, still she rode this way, that way, hugging it, hugging it, oh my dear. And it blew and blew hard and blew hard, but Kerrigan kept her to it. As long as he was there, he kept her to it. Rain fell in a cloudburst, hailstones hit her deck. There was no return for him once he'd put her out. At Inishturk, when the people saw the Maisie smothered up in darkness, they lit candles in the church. What more could Kerrigan do? He put her jaw into the hurricane, and the sea claimed him. Barrett was not a sailor to take a man from the water, yet the sea claimed him too. At noon, the storm ceased, and we heard the Maisie had foundered high upon a Mayo strand. The woman came up from the forecastle, she came up alone on deck, and a great heave cast her out on shore. And another heave came while she drowned and put her on her knees like a person would be in prayer. That's the way the people found her. And the sea never came in near that mark, never no more. John Kerrigan was found far down at Achill Sound. He's buried there. Michael Barrett was taken off Murrisk Pier. He's buried there. Kerrigan's wife was brought from Cross home to Inishbofin, and she's buried there.
Theo, thank you so much. And that's one of the great poems of sailing on the West Coast. Nope. Really terrific, terrific stuff. Going a bit further north, and another piece of history, if you go into Belfast to the Ulster Museum, there's a wonderful display from the first of the Armada wrecks to have been discovered and then excavated by underwater divers. And there's a beautiful ring there, part of the treasure that was pulled up. It's a bit like a cladder ring, but obviously it's in gold, not in silver. And the inscription on it is obviously in Spanish, "No tengo más." And I read this for a wedding. "No tengo más." With this ring, and down 400 years, the voice of the giver plucks out the words engraved inside its handcrafted golden circle. "No tengo más que dar." I have no more to give you. It should go on, "Except my heart, no tengo más que darte, pero mi corazón. I have nothing more I can give you, except my heart." But the ring with its clasped hands was too small for all the words, and she never had a second chance. His Girona was rushing to join Spain's armada, sailed late for England, glory, and the shock of the Channel battles, Drake, the fireship, storms, and helter-skelter flight. He survived them all, the struggle to weather Scotland, the breakout, northabout, into the Atlantic. But turning south at last round Ulster, just as he dared to start dreaming again of light and warmth and home, their luck ran out. In the dark of a late October northerly, the Girona struck Lacada Point, and the high sea clasped every soul on board to its cold, breaking heart. We don't know his name, only his ending. About her, nothing, except that golden ring. Lying now full fathom five, washed by the tides, deeper each day into the changing months and years. 4 centuries on, divers found it, encrusted in sea growth, prized it loose, and brought it back up, rich and strange, to emerge unchanged. No tengo más, I am nothing except in giving. Perhaps it says, giving myself to you has made me. It could be, I have never given everything, even an unvarnished. I have nothing more to give. Each ring hammers out its own conclusions. And something gleams from the ashes, endures the collision between our joys and losses. No tengo más que dar. Being and giving is what we are. That's my 20 minutes. I was going to finish with one more, but over to...
Crikey. Please go ahead and, you know... Sorry, Ben. Go for it.
Yeah,
okay.
Go for it.
Okay. Shall I give two? I've got two. Two short ones. Good. Okay. Crossing Douras Bar in memory of Seamus Heaney. The day of your death, we were sailing into Kilmacolog. Still not knowing, we made to anchor in 4 meters out in the bay, tossed by incoming waves. It was past half tide, and the emerging rocks were dripping already with kelp's orange-brown fronds. Beyond, a small pool ringed by tall firs beckoned. The chart showed a drying bar, but water enough for us to lie on the other side. So I hauled in the chain, and we felt our way over, yard by yard, as the bottom rose to meet us, green and weedy beneath our keel, then fell away again. And we were embraced by calm and settled for the night, which gave us a curlew crying loud in the still under a vault of stars, intense against the crouching hills, bright above the cold bulk of the trees. And your voice on the radio, coming now from beyond all this, the same as ever, gravelly, warm, precise, and changed utterly. And I'd like to end, I have run over, but many, many thanks for the opportunity, and thanks to Theo. I'd like to end with a poem, which is probably the most recent one I've written afloat. All sailors have to decide sometime when they're going to stop sailing. And it's a very difficult decision. Odysseus never really made it. He kept on trying to get back to sea. And this is me on somebody else's boat not very many years ago, heading south from Cork towards Kinsale. It's passage for Alan, who was my skipper. After Oysterhaven, an Eden of remembered green, with sun over the fields and a creek winding inland, we headed back to sea and hardened up, slow tacks out, then longer boards slanting in, close under the purple shadow of the cliffs. Off Kinsale, we eased sheets and bore away for the harbour, making 5 or 6 knots over a grey sea. But a sense, too, of time itself accelerating, running away faster and faster in both directions, the bows rearing up impatiently, driving foam back past the lee to spread out astern, to trail back towards a point on the horizon, disappearing out of sight. And up ahead, I knew, the dock where I must step ashore. So, many, many thanks to everyone. Really enjoyed that.